This is your KVNF Regional Newscast for Wednesday, February 25th. I'm Lisa Young. A Delta woman has been sentenced to 15-year supervised probation after authorities removed hundreds of animals from her property on D Road last summer. 79-year-old Barbara Bowman, who is suffering from vertigo and hearing loss, apologized for the situation, saying that circumstances grew beyond her capacity to keep up. The elderly woman was found guilty of 15 counts of misdemeanor animal cruelty. She faces fines and restitution totaling well over $83,000. Bowman will spend 60 days under home confinement, and her probation bars her from having more than 4 personal pets or service animals. More on this story can be found online at montrosepress.com. The Winter Olympics have wrapped up in Italy, and Team USA brought home a total of 33 medals. While ski jumper and Utah resident Kevin Bickner missed out on a medal, he still made his dad proud. KDNK's Marilyn Gleason got to see Bickner in action in Italy in the men's large hill ski jumping competition on February 14th. She caught up with Kevin's father, Tom Bickner, after the event and found out what it takes to be an Olympic ski jumper.
Yeah, this is his third Olympics, and he was really looking forward to it. And he had a pretty good result. It tied his result from Pyeongchang, so he's happy about that because the field is a lot tougher now than it was 2 Olympics ago. So he feels really good about it.
So what characteristics do you think it takes to make a great jumper?
Well,
first and foremost,
I mean, you have to have the courage to do it, but the body composition is number one. So you have to be lean and strong. And you can be tall or short, but you got to be lean and you got to be very strong and flexible. That's the best thing right there. And then it's just all mental. So strong, just really smart and being able to handle it. It's such a technical sport. So being able to understand that is really what makes a good jumper from an average one.
It's really amazing to watch the flying, but it looks like very little is going on out there in a way, but I imagine that's not true.
Well, you want to look like there's not much going on, but all of the, everything that has to happen from when you get off the bar and the in-run position, setting your balance and everything in the in-run, and then that precise moment of takeoff and how hard you push and what direction you go in, and then the flight, there's just so much that contributes to a long flight there's a lot going on. But for style points, you want to make it look like nothing's going on until you land a beautiful telemark landing.
And is it terrifying as a parent to watch your child grow up in this sport?
Not for me watching my kids. They were daredevils, and it's a very safe sport. In fact, it's the second safest sport of all of the winter Olympic sports. I think cross country might be a little safer. But federations and the regulators and FIS, they control so much of the aspects of the hill design and the suit designs that really make it a safe sport. So, there's been crashes, but there really aren't a lot of injuries in ski jumping.
And what's something that the general audience wouldn't know about ski jumping that you want to tell them?
Well, there's probably a lot, but really that a big portion of their score comes from their style points, which they all start with 20 points when they leave the jump, and then the judges start deducting from about 32 different attributes as they fly through the air. And when they land, those points are added up out of 5 judges, and the highest and lowest are dropped. And those points can make the difference between, several places. So somebody may jump further but end up behind somebody else, and that's confusing for audiences that don't understand the sport.
Okay, so what's a real style faux pas?
Oh, gosh, not putting in a telemark landing. And they call that, flat-footed or two-footed landing, where they don't have 1 foot in front of the other. That's the biggest faux pas, I think, because it deducts a ton of points.
Coming up, KVNF's James Barr speaks with Kent Tompkins on his work documenting Dinete, Hagenay, an area in northwest New Mexico with significant Native American rock art and ancient ruins. As part of the Words of Paradise series this Friday at 7 p.m., he'll present images and stories from his time on the Navajo Reservation.
Thank you. So I was born and raised down in Fruta and then ended up after graduate school on the Navajo Rez, and I fell right into working with medicine men and women back in the late 70s up through the early 90s. And as part of that indoctrination, if you will, into the culture, they chose after several years for me to start documenting sacred sites, their ceremonies, and their legend stories, etc. And part of that documentary series was to document a place called Denita Hajene, which is an area northwest New Mexico, essentially east of Farmington and Bloomfield, a place called Largo Canyon, and it's a radius of about 40 miles with about 300 ruin sites and a lot of rock art sites, pictographs and petroglyphs. What makes this area significant is that it is an area that you can see masked dances throughout the Southwest tribes, throughout the Navajo, the Apache, the Tewa over Taos Way, etc. And these masked dances are essentially depicted in the rock art. I was co-directing this project with a good friend of mine, a Navajo buddy, Will Sosi Jr. And we spent 5 years essentially documenting this area by invitation, again, of the Wisdom Keepers. I also spent some time with Ansel Adams early on to get his tune-up, if you will, so that I could really come into my own power even more to be able to step up and do what I was called for as far as, you know, doing justice to this project.
What was the end result of the Denita documentary project?
The end result was that the artists' paintings and photographs and sculptures came back to Chinle School District, you know, where I was working. And then that collection, through Arizona Commission on the Arts, formed this traveling exhibition that essentially went around the nation for about 4 or 5 years. So if you went into the Heard Museum, for instance, in Phoenix, you'd go in and there would be our photographs, and there would be narratives written from an allegorical perspective, and then there would be a video made by a Navajo filmmaker, and sculpture. But you would go in there and get a sense of this sacred place called Denita.
Coming back to your event at the Paradise Theater, which you're describing as an evening of ceremony, storytelling, and film with Diné, medicine practitioners Anderson Hosk and Harrison Jim, and filmmaker Jay Canode. What should people expect from the event?
I'll be showing some photos of about 30 years of photography and documentary work on the res, and doing a little bit of storytelling around certain images, and then dovetailing into specifics about Denita and that region and what it entails and what it means. And Anderson and Harrison will be speaking alongside from their perspective regarding Denita. And then Jay and I, well, Jay's really been doing the heavy lifting of editing this film trailer that we're going to then send out for some larger funds to do more of a broad categoried film on healers and healings and what's the cutting edge stuff out there, and not just with Denita, because that is the seed or the germination point, if you will, of this film. So Jay will be sharing that, which is about a 10-minute piece. And those guys, Anderson and Harrison, will definitely do some ceremonial things to open up the event and close the event so that we're calling in the spirit of it, so that whatever they're led to do, then we're going to give them ample time to certainly do so.
That's your KVNF Regional Newscast. For more local and regional news, visit kvnf.org. I'm Lisa Young.